Cassell County Board of Supervisors meeting. Today is November 6, 2012. The time is 9 o'clock a.m. If everybody please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We'll start this morning with public comment. This is the time on the agenda when anybody can address this Board of Supervisors on any item within our purview that is not on today's agenda. I do have one specific request, and we'll start with her, Deborah Harper. Good morning.
Happy voting day. Encourage everybody to vote today. We can all make a difference if we vote. We can't if we don't. Amen. Thank you. I'm here to just run over an update on some interesting info. I'm currently suspended from the county library, county public libraries. I have attempted to ask Vanessa if there's an appeal process on that. Last time she was here in the chambers, and she said to ask you, and I forgot. So, I was wondering if there's an appeal process for appealing false suspension from the county public libraries.
Ms. Harper, this is Monica. I'm Monica Nina, the county's chief executive officer. You would appeal to me, the county's chief executive officer.
Do I write you a letter?
You know what? You don't need to write me a letter.
Okay.
What I'll do is if you could leave your number, and what I will do is I'll give you a call so we could sit down and meet.
Awesome.
Okay?
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Email okay?
That'd be perfect.
Thank you. Also, I've been reinstated into the Stanislaus Law Library. I can use the privilege, I have privilege to use that now, and it's a kind of a snowball effect. I'm going to go through this a little bit at a time because it has a snowball effect. While I was at the Stanislaus County Law Public Library, the last time I was in the Special Collections Room, which is a secluded area where I was alone, trying to complete my Salvation Army transitional application. This turns out to be very significant all of a sudden. So, while I'm there, somebody walks in, he says, we're going to have to get you out of here. And I didn't have any clue what he was talking about, but a few minutes later, the staff in the public library told me I had to leave because the young man that was in the room with me felt threatened by me, and he left his stuff there, and he couldn't come back into the room. And I said I was peacefully trying to complete my Salvation Army transitional application. Salvation Army is a priceless shelter here. It has the emergency shelter and also houses transitional for people who are working or attempting to work, and they have a savings program. It's an awesome thing. So that was the event that caused me to go into a year. I'm suspended from the law from the public library until June of 13 for some reason. And I was sitting there peacefully doing my business. So when I recently attempted to get back into the shelter, immediately the security guard on the first morning falsely accused me of something, berated me in front of God and everybody. And I tried to defuse it. And I said, I will continue to peacefully use the Salvation Army shelter. Okay, there seems to be a direct connection there. I'm not sure. So I was referred to the new captain. They have a new captain, Captain Lisa, who was unavailable, and I wrote a letter, a soft letter, you know, trying to bridge a gap, communication gap, with Captain Lisa, and I got Mr. Jerry Morris, who has been in charge of the shelter. They're doing a lot of changes over there. They have a shift in to make a huge thing short. Mr. Morris made it clear that he was still in charge, and since that time, yesterday morning, a few of the women, they like to pick on me. God willing, they're priceless human beings. I was kicked out after I was berated, and this has been an ongoing thing. This occurs after I write a letter to someone. Very recently, there's a clear pattern. When I wrote the state medical board, I was kicked out of the shelters, thrown off the buses. The whole point is, I'm getting to that, is that when I wrote medical board complaints or amended my medical records at DMC, I was kicked out of the shelter or thrown off the buses. So recently, I wrote a letter to the medical board chairman, vice chair, Jack Waldorf, which puts Waldorf salad into perspective over the years, if anybody knows about Waldorf salad. Jack Waldorf is our vice chair of the Mental Health Board. Mr. Withrow, I ask that Linda Torres forward a copy of the letter to you. Did you receive that?
Amen.
Amen. Thank you. Okay, since that time...
Need to wrap up, Deborah.
Thank you. I was put out of the shelter and told to shut up on the bus or I wouldn't be able to ride the bus. Mm-hmm. The same cycle is happening again this season. And it's pretty cold out there in the wind. And I'm just in prayer. I was unable to talk to the captain or anybody yesterday to try to clarify anything. So I finally reached Captain Paul, who's in charge of the emergency, you know, over everybody, mm-hmm. through the Salvation Army. And he gave me his card and he said, you just tell anybody you talk to that I sent you so you can talk to Captain Lisa personally. What I'm talking about, to wrap up this whole thing, is to stabilize our community. How can we get from tossing people off the buses and out of shelters if we disagree about an amended addendum to a medical record or a letter to the Mental Health Board or even something like a med board complaint? I didn't file a med board complaint on Dr. Sharia, who evidently has a relative maybe in the Sheriff's Department. Thank you. So it's like, can we drop the personal venues from public venue and stabilize our public venues separate from the personal venues and sit down and talk to each other one-on-one or in a group and talk about what's bothering everybody? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anybody else wish to address this board on any item that is not on today's agenda? Seeing none, we'll move on to consent calendar. Today's consent calendar consists of all items marked with an asterisk on the agenda. Is there any Board of Supervisors wishing to pull an item off consent? Any member of the audience wish to comment on any item on consent calendar? Again, items marked with an asterisk on the agenda. Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board for action.
So approved.
Motion by Monteith.
Second.
Second by Withrow. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 5-0. Moving on to item B3, consideration approval of first quarter financial report for fiscal year 2012-13 and related actions.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning, everyone. I'm Monica Nino, the county's chief executive officer. Members of the board, Mr. Doring, I'm pleased to be here before you this morning, along with staff, to present the first quarter financial report that takes us through September 30th of 2012. This report is the opportunity for us to share how the county is doing over the first quarter and if there are any recommended budget changes for your consideration today. Overall, we are asking for an increase in appropriations of over $2 million, which we will detail for you today. The majority of this increase is for our Department of Behavioral Health and Recovery Services to fund the increased costs, as we stated as part of our final budget presentation, related to inpatient mental health care. I would like to make one change to the staff's recommendation, and that is to withdraw a request for 11 vehicles that we were looking at leasing for Behavioral Health and Recovery Services. Staff would like some additional time in fulfilling this request and reviewing all the possible options in acquiring these vehicles. As we continue to see signs in improvement in our local economy and the results of our strategic planning, it is important we continue to operate in a fiscally wise and efficient manner. This will be demonstrated as staff gives you an update during the presentation on our discretionary revenue, because those positive signs are starting to exist. I'm proud of the work the budget team has done, the department heads and their staff, in putting together this first quarter report. And I want to thank this board's leadership in adopting the spending plan back in September that was not just sustainable for this organization, not just for now, but into the future. We will be closely watching today's election results, especially in the Proposition 30 area, which is the governor's tax initiative. Although they have not stated that cuts to local government would be forthcoming as a result if the proposition were not to pass, we are concerned about that based upon the state's history. We will closely monitor this and report back to the board as a result of the results of that election. Mr. Risen, our assistant executive officer who leads our budget team, and our chief operations officer, Patricia Hill Thomas, along with our senior manager, David Jones, will be here today to present the organization's first quarter report. Thank you.
Good
Good morning, Chairman O'Brien. Thank you, Mrs. Nino. Board members, we're pleased to be before you this morning. And I want to acknowledge at the staff table with me this morning is Mrs. Patricia Hill Thomas, our Chief Operations Officer, and David Jones, who prepared a PowerPoint presentation. I'd like to start by sharing my appreciation as well, especially to the budget team. They're an extremely hardworking and very dedicated group. It's just a real pleasure to work with them as well as with our departments and department heads. Our goals of the first quarter financial report are to provide you a summary of how we're doing when it comes to the county budget. And we tried to come before you in each of our quarters, the first quarter financial report, our mid-year financial report, and third quarter. The first is the most difficult to really get a sense or pulse of where we're at because our books don't close till the end of July, and a lot of times we only have a month or two worth of revenue history to look at. But we can tell you overall that we are on track when it comes to our budget, and we're in good shape from that perspective. Moving on, as usual, our report to you today is organized by your seven board priorities. As a quick recap, the 2012-13 adopted final budget that you approved in September was just a little over $984 million. Throughout the report, though, you'll notice we analyze what we refer to as the operating budget. In addition to what was approved as the part of the final budget, the operating budget includes any spending authority that carried over from last year, as well as any additional authority that's been approved in separate budget agenda items since the final budget. And our total operating budget is now a little over $1 billion, a staggering sum. The adjustments that we're bringing to you today total a little bit over $2 million. Also, we're recommending a decrease in revenue of $28,294, which means we're going to be relying on the use of some one-time funding to fund the requests that are before you today. The largest single recommendation in the first quarter financial report relates to inpatient mental health services. The request of $1.5 million, and Ms. Hill-Thomas will be addressing that to you in a few minutes. As Ms. Nino indicated, our discretionary revenue is looking positive so far through the first quarter, but as I indicated earlier, you can see that very little has come in, as is typical at the first quarter point. And so we tend to wait till mid-year to really get a sense of pulse of how we're looking, both from a property tax and sales tax perspective. But you can see that by this chart, we're up $1.9 million over where we were at this time last year. We'd like to jump right into our department recommendations.
And can you share with this board the $157 million includes the payback of the state's $7.9 million, our year in projection?
Right. I believe the final budget number, and I'm going to take a, if you'll just give me a moment to take a peek here. Our discretionary revenue budget number that was approved as part of the final budget was $147,141,000, but that did not include the state payback of the Prop 1A funding of what we're estimating to be around $8 million. You'll remember at the final budget I reported to you that we were holding back on that because we were anticipating the state might turn around and take it away again. Subsequent to the final budget, we learned that there was an additional proposition passed by the voters that somehow it eluded me that took away the authority for the state to come back and borrow these funds again. And so consequently, we are not going to be subject to that risk that we originally had under Prop 1A where they could borrow the money twice in every 10-year period. And so this chart, when it shows the projected number of 157.5, is factoring in that $8 million as revenue that we will probably receive in June of 13 and will be available for your board's discretion on how to use it.
So this graph isn't as rosy as it looks.
This is one-time funding.
One-time
dollar.
Sure.
Why does that show up then as revenue? It's really the payback of a receivable. Why isn't that, was it ever set up as a receivable on the books when that money was lent?
No. Typically, the county's practice, and we have our auditor controller in the audience, so correct me, Ms. Klein, if I say this incorrectly. We typically only record on the county's financial records accounts receivable that are collectible within a 12-month period. This loan with the state has been roughly 3 years old.
I believe so.
So it exceeded that 12-month period, and so we did not set this up originally as a receivable. The same thing with SB 90, state-mandated reimbursements. We do not set those up as receivables because we do not anticipate it. When we incur those costs and the state owe us that money for that given year, we typically do not receive it within a 12-month period.
So how is it recorded in that year when they take the money from it? It's recorded as an expense in that year as an appropriation of some sort? But I'm just wondering when it goes out, how does it...
You know, I'm trying to recall. I know this board, what we did is we had it set aside as one-time funding. I don't know if our auditor controller recalls, because it was over 3 years ago. How we actually recorded the expense. But
we'll
can get back to you, Supervisor Withrow. We'll get an answer to that.
Okay. Yeah. Any other questions on discretionary revenue? I will mention our sales tax is looking promising so far this year, but like I said, we tend to want to hold back until mid-year when we have more history in which to kind of do projections to see how we think we'll end the year. Okay. Now I'll jump into our department recommendations, and starting with a safe community. Overall, you'll see recommendations include overall $390,000 increase in appropriations, $190,000 in revenue. We'll start with the district attorney budget. We're recommending an increase of $9,599 in both appropriations and revenue for the victim advocacy and outreach program. This grant program provides advocacy and outreach to the unserved and underserved victims of crime in the community, and it's fully dependent on federal pass-through Victims of Crime Act monies received through the California Emergency Management Agency, CalEMA. Also, some other recommendations related to CalEMA is a decrease of $19,172 in revenue and $14,436 in appropriations, which will require the use of $4,736 in fund balance. And this is for the Victim Services Program, which is also a grant program funded through CalEMA. It comes from state penalty assessment funds levied on convicted criminals. CalEMA initially makes an estimate of what they think the funding will be, and once funding has been finalized from CalEMA, we adjust our grant budget accordingly, and that's why you see the adjustments here. Also in the district attorney's office, we're requesting to restore one attorney 5 and one criminal investigator 2 position due to upcoming retirements. And so we want to get training in advance going on these folks and to maintain continuity of services. The funding will come from a combination of salary savings and the use of the department's net county cost savings. In the sheriff's department, they have some budgets like the DA wants funding is a little more clear, especially as it relates to year-end fund balance. They come in to make adjustments. These happen to be budgets where they try to budget the entire amount of fund balance each year. And so you'll see an increase of $25,235 in the CalID program and a decrease in the vehicle theft program of $30,305. The sheriff is requesting to purchase 3 vehicles for the detention division for statewide transportation purposes. The funding for this purchase comes from civil process fees, and so $200,000 is being transferred from the civil division to the detention services budget for the purchase and equipment of these transport vehicles. The civil processing fee is $12 that is assessed to judgment debtors as established by government code. The fees are deposited in a special fund that can only be used for vehicle fleet replacement and technical equipment. Vehicles for the sheriff's office are regularly purchased using this restricted fund to help reduce impacts to the general fund. Once these vehicles have reached a certain point of their life, they're transferred over to the operations division, and consequently that helps avoid costs in the general fund budgets. by not requiring replacement of vehicles in the operations unit. I don't know if I messed that up a little bit. If you follow me, essentially, we use civil process fees, we transfer the money into the detention division, they buy vehicles, they run them 2 or 3 years, and then they transfer those vehicles over to the operations division, so operations doesn't have to be replacing vehicles. The sheriff is also requesting to add a block budgeted manager 3 to oversee their human resources functions. Also, they add a forensic autopsy technician to help in autopsy support services at the coroner's facility. This is a new classification in our system. They're also requesting to reclassify upwards a legal clerk 4 to a block budgeted supervising legal clerk 2. So that's for safe community recommendations. I'd like to turn the presentation over now to Ms. Hill Thomas, who will guide you through some of the other recommendations.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Ms. Nino, Mr. Doring. Patty Hill Thomas, the executive office. While we spend a tremendous amount of time following significant policy and fiscal issues in the healthy community functions of county government, we have very few adjustments to recommend to you at the first quarter today. The first is in the behavioral health and recovery services, as Ms. Nino mentioned, and Mr. Risen will review with you when he goes through our specific recommendations at the end of this presentation today. The request included in the first quarter report to acquire 11 vehicles is being withdrawn at this time. The department will return to the board at a later date regarding this request. That will result in a $68,125,000 adjustment to the numbers presented to you at first quarter. Also in behavioral health and recovery services, there are some increases in appropriation for drug and alcohol program and other programs all around how to appropriately allocate costs for the very exciting electronic medical records effort underway, a work in progress in behavioral health and recovery. Because the Mental Health Services Act money only covers a portion of the EMR, electronic medical record system, it's appropriate to allocate those costs to the other functions of behavioral health and recovery. That includes a $32,450 increase in appropriation for the recovery center and a transfer of $59,000 in appropriations to drug and alcohol, all related to the same functions paid for with departmental savings, not general fund dollars. The most significant issue before you, and it seems as though I sit at this microphone regularly and talk to you about this issue, and indeed next Tuesday we will be here. You'll be presented the annual report from the Mental Health Board, which Supervisor Withrow is a member on your behalf. And our team will present to you an effort that has been over the year in making, and that is a strategic plan for secure 24/7 mental health programs. And its timeliness couldn't be more appropriate. Again, before you today, there is a significant request to increase appropriations using departmental savings to the managed care budget for the increased cost and increased volume in inpatient hospitalization costs related to our psychiatric inpatient facility in this county called Doctors Behavioral Health Center, operated by Doctors Medical Center and Tenet Healthcare Corporation. I believe, as you're aware, counties are mandated to provide crisis stabilization. And when it comes to people, county residents who have severe mental health crisis, that's hospitalization for the uninsured and for Medi-Cal eligible individuals. While we receive about 50% level of reimbursement for Medi-Cal, the county is 100% responsible for those who are uninsured, much like on the medically indigent adult side on health care. This is a fundamental function and responsibility of county government. As your board is aware, our hospitalization rates and volumes have increased dramatically. On this chart, the top blue line represents Doctors Behavioral Health Center patients, and the yellow line represents non-Stanislaus County patients at DMC. When you look at the line that is, I can't see yours, the purple, which is Stanislaus County patients, you see within the circle the dramatic rise in county responsible patients. Again, those are uninsured patients and those are Medi-Cal eligible patients who are the responsibility of the county. That rise is dramatic for many reasons, and those are being tracked both from a crisis level in our community that individuals are experiencing. We're also tracking the 109 offenders returned to the community and all of the variables. But this graphic represents a very complex system of care. And what you'll see next Tuesday in the form of the strategic plan is an effort by the county, by Doctors Medical Center and Doctors Behavioral Health Center, are very important partners in the provision of these services, and all of the county's hospitals, I underscore, all of the county's hospitals who have come together to develop a continuum of care strategy that focuses on a multiple level of care that are not all at the highest level and highest acuity requirement. That is essential for us to cap this financial exposure. At the rate that we are spending the fund balance in 11-12 that the Behavioral Health and Recovery Services Department used, nearly $2 million above the $4 million budgeted last fiscal year. It's estimated during the current fiscal year, 12-13, that an additional $1.7 million beyond what we're asking you for today will be required. As part of our strategy, we will be recommending the creation of the psychiatric health facility, which is a lower cost option, but that will not be enough to solve this problem. We will really need to focus and partner with all area hospitals on both crisis intervention at the front end and aftercare solutions at the back end. And I'm very pleased to tell you that there have been so far two stakeholders meetings of the Mental Health Services Act groups focused on trying to find community-based solutions that would not exclusively be the county stepping in to solve the problem. This strategic plan will be presented to you next Tuesday. It is intended to change this tide of cost exposure, which would ultimately, sometime near the end of next fiscal year, impact the general fund if not abated. I'm going to kind of skip. I got a little passionate about that, so I already did the next slide without looking at it. In addition, in the Health Services Agency, we have recommended to you today a $71,000 transfer within the public health budget for some floor covering repairs that we consider a safety hazard. No general funds for that request as well. In our programs of a strong local economy, Alliance WorkNet, the Economic Development Act, and the library, we do have some recommendations in our library budget, and a $71,158 increase in both appropriations and revenue to fund the Reading Works Adult Literacy Program. The Literacy Center received the award from the California Library Literacy Services to fund the Reading Works Program for the 12-13 fiscal year. In Alliance WorkNet, we are recommending to restore one unfunded staff services analyst position. The position will assist with increased workloads in the contract monitoring unit, and to unfund one vacant accountant 3 position. These positions are needed, in our view, to assist with the federally meeting the federally required performance goals of these programs. In our strong agricultural and economy and heritage programs, there are no recommended first quarter budget adjustments. In our well-planned infrastructure system, environmental resources, parks, planning, and public works, there are no recommended first quarter budget adjustments. In our efficient delivery of public services, and you see all of our departments there, we do have several recommended changes. First, in the Chief Executive Office, risk management, we are recommending a decrease in revenue using retained earnings for the risk management dental self-insurance employee rates to decrease employee rates by 10% for the calendar year 2013, and a $163,604 decrease in revenue, again using retained earnings in the program for the vision self-insurance program to decrease employee vision rates by 50% for calendar year 2013. This is in order to keep employee health plan costs in line with the 2012 rates. It's recommended that we use a portion of our accumulated fund balance for both dental and vision to offset these rate increases as planned. In our office, the Chief Executive Office, we ask and perhaps beg for your approval today to double fill one manager for a position for a period up to 3 months. All of our staff is talented, and I want to thank them. I think I forgot to do that at the beginning. We have an incredible senior manager who is a fiscal financial budget extraordinaire, and he plans to retire, and we wish him the best. We need to ensure that our fiscal integrity, our strengths, our analysis, and our hands on the buttons continue in the kind of way that we provide that analysis, monitoring, and assessments of the county's fiscal position on a 24/7 basis. To do that, we ask to double fill for a 3 month period one manager for position. We have fund balance savings in our budget to fund that so that we can ensure a smooth transition on our budget team for our fiscal accountability to the board and to the public. In our strategic business technology department, we have recommended for you today a $52,631 increase for 6 months to restore the cost of an unfunded position, to restore one unfunded systems engineer two, and to reclassify downward to a block budgeted application specialist three. The positions will support our Oracle financial management system, will be funded from a special services agreement with the health services agency. There's no general fund impact of this. These positions will assist with a task such as providing all the necessary reports and end user support for these important programs. In our auditor controller's office, today we're recommending that your board unfund one vacant application specialist two position and unfund one accounting supervisor position. You may recall as part of the final budget, the auditor requested the restoration of three unfunded accountant three positions. Those positions have been filled, and the department is now requesting to unfund the two positions before you today. This is really essential and in line with the auditor's ongoing strategy of restructuring positions based on meeting current demands and workload obligations. In terms of overall staffing, when your board adopted the final budget, we had 3,799 full-time positions. Since then, your board has approved one action item for the health services agency that added four positions. And before you today, the recommended first quarter adjustments, there would be, with your approval, a net increase of three positions for a total of 3,806 total positions. As you are aware, however, we look both at where we are today and we look ahead to the future. There are a number of significant challenges, perhaps one of the most trying and challenging times that I've seen in county government. I've already talked to you about the behavioral health and recovery exposure, the rate of psychiatric inpatient admissions, and the anticipation of next Tuesday's presentation on a strategic plan. We need to find a way not to rely on fund balance savings for that program and many others. It's not sustainable. In our community services agency, our foster care costs continue to grow. We still anticipate a shortfall of approximately $6.4 million in the current year. And while we have, with your board's approval, set aside funds and a special contingency fund for that, the enhancements, eligibility, and program changes, that there's a potential for a significant increase in cost and caseload over the next 2 years for foster care, one of the aid programs that has grown dramatically, both in demand and cost exposure to county government. There are a total of 52 youths on the average monthly caseload right now, and we have many dependent youth in foster care and group home settings from other counties that reside here in our county. This change, the regulatory requirements and the demands, could raise that for 52 to 96 per month over the next 2 year period, a significant fiscal issue for the county. We continue to track and worry over the cost of the in-home supportive services to county government. As you know, there is a shortfall in our final budget. While we have budgeted some contingency funds for this, and we are currently in labor negotiations with UDW, there is the implementation of the new maintenance of effort this year between the county and the state of California. And there is also the threat of the CalFresh waiver, worth about $10.8 million to Santa Claus County to offset the cost for the CalFresh program. That waiver expires in June of 13. That represents 48% of the CalFresh program funding. There is a risk and exposure to the county, both from federal and state actions that we need to engage in and monitor closely. With that, I think I will turn it back over to Mr. Risen.
All right. As Ms. Nino mentioned earlier, today's election day, and we're nervously watching, especially Proposition 30, not because the governor has stated that it will impact local government, but our concerns about whether the trigger cuts as proposed will be sustained, or whether, given their past history, they will look to local government to help fund some of those impacts should it not pass. Another key legislation that was passed recently regarding pension reform. We've been spending quite a bit of time analyzing that, trying to figure out the impact to us as an organization. We are in the process of providing briefings to you as board members about potential impacts from that pension reform. But primarily it appears to be affecting employees hired after January 1st, 2013, who do not have reciprocity or can't transfer over their benefits from another public retirement system. Also under Ms. Hills, Thomas's wonderful leadership, our capital projects team is very busy these days with a number of massive projects, really a 456 new maximum security bed unit, as well as 192-bed honor farm replacement, a day reporting center. Those will have varying impacts as they come online, beginning as early as 2013 with the honor farm bed replacement. And hopefully by 2016, I believe.
We'll be done.
We'll be done with the new maximum security beds. We'll have to be factoring in the cost of that in our long-range modeling, and we'll be sharing that as we move forward. Our medical self-insurance program is completing its first 9 months. We'll be providing a report to you sometime early in the spring of next year about its first year, how it's done overall. But at this point, we're recommending an increase in medical self-insurance rates of 3.75%. And as I said, we'll return back to you with further information on that. To wrap up, our staff recommendations are that you accept the Chief Executive Officer's first quarter financial report for fiscal year 12-13. We would request that you amend recommendation number 2 as it was in your report to authorize the Chief Executive Officer and the Auditor Controller to make the necessary adjustments as recommended in the first quarter financial report, except for the vehicle acquisition request for behavioral health and recovery services. As Ms. Thomas mentioned, that would be an adjustment down in revenue and appropriations of $11,250 in our mental health budget and $56,875 in our Mental Health Services Act budget for a total reduction of $68,125. Thirdly, we would request that you amend the salary and position allocation resolution to reflect the staffing recommendations included in the report to be effective November 17th, and that you also approve the contracts and agreements listed on Attachment C. At that point, we'll wrap up our presentation and be happy to entertain any questions you may have.
Any questions from board members?
Just want to ask about the CalFresh waiver, because this is something new. I hadn't really heard about this. $10.8 million would absolutely be devastating to the county. What are the, I guess, what would stop the way, we currently have a waiver. Is that the way I read it?
Yes.
And so they're giving us, or we're not matching $10.8 million. Is that?
Essentially, I'm not sure that we give or match. I'll ask Chris Applegate to assist, but we essentially get offset a significant amount of the cost because of the demographics of our community. Chris, can you come up and join me, please?
I'm sorry.
No.
What would be the, I guess, not asking what the chances are, but what would be the reasoning for not continuing that waiver?
This is actually a statewide waiver. The state of California failed to make their match to the federal government, and so they the legislature passed a waiver for the entire state to not have to have a county or state match and to pass through the federal money without the state match. That was for 3 years, and this is the last of the 3 years. So it goes away at the end of this third year, and there's no movement at this time to change that. But I think that, again, relies on what happens with the election, the propositions, and it will probably be relooked at in January.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chris.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask the same thing about the waiver, because I hadn't heard about it either. I have an interesting, if the state is supposed to repay the property tax money of about $9 million, and then we'll lose the waiver for $10.8 million, so we're actually, when you take the two in combination, we're still behind $2 million.
The counties have and will argue that this is not a county responsibility. It's a state obligation to match the funds, but unfortunately, as you well know, and you've just pointed out, the state's been pretty negligent in meeting those demands. We will need to argue that we have no legal responsibility to provide the program beyond our original match requirements. That's a tough issue as well. So this affects all of the counties, and it will be a significant issue that's just starting to emerge now, and we thought we should include it in our first quarter report to your board.
The county didn't have a responsibility for the child support. The credit program were not working. We still got stuck with the bill 1 year for the penalty. Do we have any recourse if the state doesn't repay our property tax money? I don't know where that money is going to come from. Actually, the state has included it in their adopted budget, so we fully anticipate, and Governor Brand has indicated that they'll be making a repayment of that in June of 2013.
And as recent as 2 weeks ago, I think 3 weeks ago is when I checked in with our auditor controller, it's been a few weeks, we have not received any letter saying that it will be returned to us by June of 2013. You often will receive a note saying you can anticipate X dollar amount and when. That has yet to occur. In fact, CSAC even reached out to me to see if we had received anything from a letter from the state controller's office, and we have yet to.
Supervisor Mitra? Stan, just a couple quick questions. I didn't understand the dental self-insurance decrease there. We're going to use fund balances to reduce employee costs. Is that, and I'm not sure, and the same for the vision. I wasn't sure.
Yeah.
Okay,
so
on there.
Both of those funds have accumulated some fairly sizable fund balances.
Okay.
Our medical, our health portion of our employee rates is going up 3.75%. And so to help offset that increase, I thought it was a strategic time to use some of that fund balance in both the dental and vision programs
okay.
to drive down those rates to help offset.
Okay.
So that overall employees will feel a negligible impact.
Okay. And we have that fund balance from
years accumulated over a number of years, and it's actually fairly significant compared to the size of the budget.
Okay, good. That was good.
And Stan, isn't it for both employer and employee rates are both receiving the benefit from the dental, from the fund balance?
I believe that is correct.
Okay.
Yes.
So it isn't just an employee, but also the employer rates.
Okay. Then the last thing was the foster care assistance, you know, the amount that we thought to short, like $6.4 million. Do we think that's going to be worse now? Are we thinking that's going to be worse? We've set aside, and through contingencies, 6.4 was about, are we worried that that's not going to get it?
We are concerned that it could not be enough, and it's too early to tell. There are significant both increased demands for foster care in the numbers, but regulations that require extended and enhanced services for young people longer than the traditional 18 months. There was actually a piece of legislation, 18 years of age, a piece of legislation that changed that. Our concern is for the exposure there. However, overall, when the way we analyze and monitor our budget and the way your board has set up the contingencies for match, we are still managing and tracking within the total. So when you look at in-home supportive services, you look at foster care, and you look at aid, overall, we're tracking within our total appropriations and our match contingency. But we point out to you today several issues whether it's the waiver for CalFresh or foster care or the continued struggle with in-home supportive services, that could have a more significant impact than we plan. We monitor these very closely, and they will be a big part of your mid-year fiscal report as well.
So for the first quarter, we're whatever, $1.6 million into our, we are going to use this whole contingency, you think, and we're tracking that. But at this point, we're still on track.
We are.
Okay. Okay, good.
I have a couple questions. One, back on that health 3.75% increase. If I read the staff report right, we're not, that isn't the request today that's coming back to us.
My understanding, our rates, typically we haven't brought our rates before this board for health insurance for either dental. That's primarily for information.
Yeah, that's for information purposes.
Yeah.
Okay. I do have concerns on that, but two questions within the Sheriff's Department. I don't know if the Sheriff wants to respond or staff. The reclassification. If I read the staff report right, that's within the City of Patterson Police Services, on the reclassification of the legal clerk.
Sheriff. I believe that's the case, but we'll have the sheriff confirm that.
Good morning, Chairman O'Brien, members of the board, CEO Nito, and Mr. Doering. Yes, sir, that's within the city of Patterson, that budget unit. It has to do with the fact that there's some supervision going on, and so it's appropriately.
My question is they going to pay the increase in cost?
Yes, sir.
Perfect. Number two does have to do with the vehicles. And the staff report talks about we need to replace these vehicles because we're at 50,000 miles. You get a little more information from Stan this morning that says, you know, it's how we rotate the cars through. And talking to you, I get a little more information that it's, you have a more cost-effective way of doing it by changing the vehicle, and so I just want to understand it completely.
And certainly so. And first of all, I want to share with the board and the community, you know, the Sheriff's Office, in partnership with the board, the CEO's office, our finance team, this finance team is very, very good at managing our budget. We're effective, we're efficient, and the reason we have a fund balance is because of those effective, efficient business practices as well as our vacancy rate. If we filled every one of our vacancies today, we wouldn't have a fund balance. That's very important to note. Secondly, I absolutely support, publicly support, Supervisor O'Brien's position that we should, at every step of the way, exercise discretion and carefully consider purchases that we make. Because, frankly, I'm accountable to the people, and our budget is balanced, unlike our friends and colleagues in Sacramento. And so in this particular case, you're correct. We're not replacing vehicles. But there is a change in what our mission demands are right now, and that primarily has to do with transportation. So the civil unit, while they use law enforcement vehicles, and remember, again, specific to us, we have to have law enforcement rated, pursuit rated vehicles because all of these vehicles serve a dual purpose. They're not allocated to one specific area. They can be used department wide. So the change in mission here really has to do with statewide transportation. Thanks to our friends at CDCR, they've closed the reception center at DVI, and now we're transporting state prison inmates to Kern County. As a matter of fact, this morning, two van loads, 23 inmates were transported to Kern County. And so we need SUV type vehicles that we can not only use for civil, but for transportation and other purposes. Are we replacing cars that have 50,000 miles? Absolutely not. What we're doing is we're using a special fund to purchase these vehicles, no net county cost, but at the same time, I'm going to take those Crown Victorias that civil has and insert them into patrol. The reason for that is, thanks to the Ford Motor Company, our multi-year platform of Ford Crown Victoria police interceptors has been done away with. Ford decided they're not going to make these cars anymore. Unfortunately, we're not in a fiscal position right now to go out and rotate the fleet to some other platform. So in working with Steve DeMouse, who, by the way, is terrific, my message, our plan was to inventory as many Ford Crown Vics as we could get our hands on, because they're fairly inexpensive, and continue to try to utilize that platform for at least another fiscal cycle or two before we're forced to move to some other patrol vehicle platform. We haven't made that determination yet. So we're taking existing vehicles and we're moving them to patrol operations. We're not replacing them at 50,000 miles. And by doing that, the same number of vehicles that we're moving is three less vehicles that I have to acquire through net county cost or existing appropriations. So I hope that kind of clarifies it. I know that, you know, the vehicle issue has been of great concern, and again, I want to support the board and support our finance team, and again, reaffirm to the community that we are not out spending money unnecessarily. Even though we've seen an increase in discretionary revenue as reported this morning, doesn't mean we have to run out and spend it. I remain very, very concerned about realignment, what happens today with Prop 30. There are many unknown variables as we move forward, trying to continue to work through very difficult economic times. And while I'm excited that the sheriff's office is, you know, hiring for the first time in 3.5 years, and you know, we're building public safety infrastructure with beds and a coroner's facility, and you know, we've seemed to have hit the bottom of our fiscal freefall. Caution is the name of the game. I don't want to hire people being dependent upon money from the state and then have to turn around and come before you again and implement a reduction in force because suddenly that funding goes away. So everything we do is cautious, deliberate, and there's careful consideration in our decisions before we bring them to you.
Thank you very much for that response. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay. This time I'll ask if anybody in the audience wish to comment on this agenda item. Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board and ask for any. Come on up. If you have a question, come on up. Hold on 1 second while we get the mic.
I'm the mental health board in the mental health area. I used to work at the VA for the psychiatry department in San Diego, mental health, outpatient clinic, VA medical center. I have a few questions that will probably be covered next week in the mental health side of the presentation. It's like the increase, not mentioned, the sudden increase in patients, I think it was, in the inpatient. I know when I first moved back here, I was shopping at a grocery store for an overnight, 24 grocery store. I came from down south. 24 hours was normal, and it was very unusual. I ended up with six officers, suggesting that I go to SBHC because I needed a place to sleep that night. And homelessness is not mental health, okay? Maybe we can start defining or encourage people to define what mental health is for in 2012, because homelessness is not mental health, and there's part of your increase, I almost can guarantee you, in the cost of mental health. And mental health is not a catch-all for rather than sending somebody through the jail system, you want to push them over to the mental health, you know, if our system shoves people into the mental health as a catch-all, that's another increase. And I noticed that I was most maliciously prosecuted from a transportation ticket I should never have received. All these false accusations are going through the community I'm enduring. And I can just say that the push is for me to have mental labels with no substantiation. If we define what mental health is, we describe and symptoms, you know, you have to have symptoms to be mental, and sometimes symptoms.
Can you tie this back to the budget for me?
That's it's all weight onto your budget. So if we can consider defining what the mental health is and how you're going to work with the mental health, rather than using it as a catch-all. the things. It could help increase or decrease the budget, the weight on the budget. Does that make sense?
Very good.
I'm terrible at speaking. I'm sorry.
No problem. Thank you. And if anybody else in the audience wish to speak on the budget, seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board for any final comments. I do. I will support our changes in first year today, but I will continue to have concerns of what our future is, and I want to recap some of those. First of all, we're balancing this budget. We started balancing it with $53.4 million of one-time money. We're up to $69.1 million of one-time money. In the BHRS with our inpatient care, 35% increase, cost up to $8.7 million just through March. IHSS, $8.1 to $8.7 million shortfall. The risk in the CalFresh that we talked about, $10.8 million. Foster care doubling to $6.4 million shortfall. Our new jail, we've got to be on the look for that $10 million increase. Risk management, $1.5 million increase for litigation. And we're still all wondering what Prop 30 is going to do today. So we still have some huge challenges in front of us. And then to see our $10 million increase in revenue, eight of it really is just a payback. It's not as rosy as I first thought. So anybody have a motion to approve first year, first quarter?
Just one question. Of the $69 million of one-time funding, how much of that is for one-time projects? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We talk about one-time funding.
Is that $48 million in public works part of that?
I wonder how much of
there
that?
Is. I believe it's either $48 or $43 million is what really bumped it up this current year for Kernan, and along with, what is the other one? There's two major road projects that we included.
Kernan and Clarabelle.
And Clarabelle.
Let me just see if I can find that real quick.
Because I'm just thinking that sounds terrible like that. But then when you think about it, it's money that's going towards one-time projects. It's not as bad as that.
Hang on just a second. I'll find that for you.
Yeah, it's okay. We don't have to get it this second. I just wanted to...
Yeah, I'm looking here at the revenue and the expenses and getting an independent house.
Can you see it on the priority table?
Well, there'd be... Just looking at those two road projects themselves, because some of that is coming in as revenue from PFF, it looks like that in itself is probably a drain of about $8 million. So those two projects probably represent about $8
million. About $8 million.
The general fund, let me find my net county cost schedule. The general fund in total is using $31 million, but you remember almost $14 million of that is related to departmental and net county cost savings. So between that $14 million and probably about $9 million related to those two road projects, you know, we're getting up close to half.
And that $14 relates to carryovers from the last 2 years.
Correct.
Of departments having the opportunity to do the 75% savings of their year-end savings, which would not relate to one time, because a number of our county departments utilize that to fund the increased cost for retirement.
So it sounds about $23
million. Yeah, so just to highlight maybe a few of the other big ones, managed care is, in the final budget was using about $3.8 million. Children and Families Commission has a planned use of their fund balance. That's about $2 million. Clerk Recorder is doing some modernization projects of digitizing a lot of their records. That's about $2.2 million of one-time fund balance. Road and Bridge overall, as I mentioned, the final budget was showing about $7 million. The landfill is using about $3.1 million. Local transit, $1.3 million. I believe that's for bus purchases. So you can see, by and large, the majority of these are one-time uses of one-time funding.
Any action, any motion to approve?
I'm going to approve staff recommendations 1 through 4.
Motion by DeMartini, is there a second?
If I may, that would include the amendment to recommendation number 2 that would provide for the authorization as chief executive officer and the auditor and controller to make the necessary adjustments as recommended in the first quarter financial report, except for the vehicle acquisition request for behavioral health and recovery services.
Yes, I meant to say that.
And the second, is there a second?
I will second that.
Second by Withrow. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Passes 5-0. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Item 4, continuation of approval to adopt the nuisance abatement hearing board's recommendation and find that property located at 1301 and 1113 Washington Road near Turlock is a nuisance.
Chairman O'Brien, board members, CEO Nino, and County Council Doring, Jamie Agers, the Interim Director of Environmental Resources. Joining me at the table today are Angela Freitas, Director of Planning Community Development, and Tom Bowes, Deputy County Counsel. The item before you today is a code enforcement case involving 1301 and 1113 Washington Road in Turlock. The map shows you the location in the Turlock area of the two parcels in question. Code enforcement is one of the programs operated by the Department of Environmental Resources, and staff in that unit respond to a variety of complaints of alleged ordinance violations throughout the unincorporated area. In this program, they attempt to gain voluntary compliance through education and personal contact, working directly with the parties involved. We're here today discussing this case because the county received multiple complaints about these two properties in the Turlock area, specifically that there were land use activities taking place without permits, that grading activities had taken place without the proper permits, and that non-permitted construction and remodeling activities, along with on-site produce sales and the conversion of a single-family dwelling to an office building. The board first considered this item on its agenda last week, and at that time staff reviewed the history on this case and effectively established that these activities have occurred on site without the proper permits. The property owner then addressed the board and acknowledged the county's requirements and his failure to follow them. At that time, staff presented the following recommendations. First, to adopt the Nuisance Abatement Hearing Board's recommendation and find the properties to be a nuisance, to direct county staff to take immediate action to abate any health and safety concerns, however, also to hold in abeyance the abatement of illegal land uses for which the owner was pursuing the proper land use permits. After much discussion, the board directed staff to look into the possibility of developing an indemnity agreement between the county and the property owners, and then bring the item back to the board for further consideration this week. And with that, I'll turn it over to Angela and Tom.
Good morning. Since the meeting last Tuesday, the planning department has had an opportunity to go on site to evaluate the barn that's being used for the sweet potato washing, sorting, and packing line. The structure has been altered, remodeled, and added on to in a non-conventional manner, and for this structure to be permitted, an extensive amount of professional design and engineering is required in accordance with the minimum standards of the California Building Code. Last Friday, the department also received a building permit application for this barn, and staff is in the process of plan checking the submitted plans and will be working with Mr. Avila's engineer to obtain necessary clarification revisions to these plans. As of start of business day this morning, we had not yet received the building permit for the new steel structure. This is a roof-only structure, and staff has been made aware this last week that there may very well be a milk barn conversion that we will also need to address. At this time, I'll turn it over to Tom.
Good morning. During this last week, we have worked on preparing an indemnity agreement, and I am happy to announce that this morning Mr. Avila has signed an indemnity agreement. The draft is in your package, and the final that was signed this morning is
essentially the same. The important portions of that agreement is the insurance and the indemnity provisions. The term, July 1st of 2013, we expect that he will be able to obtain approval or denial of the conditional use permit application by July 1st of 2013. Another important provision is the Exhibit 2, and I believe you received that last night. We are looking for Mr. Avila to obtain an encroachment permit from Public Works to move the driveway on Fulkhurst Road and to abandon the driveway on Washington Road, and also to get erosion control and dust control plans in place. And as far as the building permits, we're looking for him to complete all that is necessary in order for those building permits to be issued no later than February 1st of 2012. I noted that there is a mistake in the staff recommendations, and I'll get to that in just a moment. Staff recommendation number one is to adopt the Nuisance Abatement Hearing Board's recommendation and find the properties to be a nuisance. Direct county staff to implement the following health and safety concerns at the property and hold in advance the abatement of any illegal land use for which the property owner is actively seeking a land use permit. And two, delay implementation of the immediate abatement action provided that the owners agree to perform the action set forth in the indemnity agreement, and approve the indemnity agreement and substantially the form set forth in the attachment A, authorizing the interim director of DER to finalize the agreement. The mistake is in 2E. It should read, delay implementation of the immediate abatement action outlined in 2A, comma, provided that the owners agree within 2 weeks to perform the action set forth in an indemnity agreement. The way it reads is the that the owners agree to perform the actions within 2 weeks set forth in an indemnity agreement. So it should change to move that clause within 2 weeks to right after owners agree. With that, staff is available for any questions.
Any questions, staff? Supervisor Monteith?
Is there anything in there that states if he doesn't meet those requirements, there'll be no time extensions, additional time extensions?
Yes, at the end of
each one has a time stipulated.
Yes.
If you, let's say you get the second plateau, and he doesn't meet those, then we are not extending any time extensions, and the project comes to an end.
For example, if he does everything that's required of him by November 9th, 2012, and then he misses or fails to perform one of the items A through E in by November 16th, 2012, he will be in breach of the contract, and we will have the opportunity at that point to go ahead and enforce the county's the building code by seeking an injunction or whatever other available legal remedies.
Well, then most likely would that end up back up here?
No, we're not at.
I'm going to be very candid. I believe it should be stated that if he doesn't meet these requirements, it's automatic void, period. Because the history of what Mr. Avila has done has not followed through, and I don't want to have to go through this all the time and having the board, having you as a department constantly going through this. I think we've stated the situation. If he's agreeable with it, that's fine. That's great. But one of the problems I'm having is we have required in agriculture and in businesses within the community of certain requirements, and they have done that. Here we have a history of a gentleman who has not held any comment he's submitted to in 2009. I think truthfully, if you want to get down to it, it depends upon the credibility of the county in enforcing the regulations. Why should anyone be concerned about meeting the regulations of the county if they are not enforced over a period of time? Now, had there been any history of making commitments and following through, that's another issue. But that has not been true. So I am not in favor of any extension or laxity in this contract. The other thing which I think has been already discussed is the 30-day cancellation arrangement. That has been taken out, correct?
That has been taken out. And in the same section where that 30-day cancellation was, in paragraph 2.1, it states this agreement shall commence on the date set forth above and continue until A, owner's use permit application is approved or denied, B, July 1st, 2013, or C, owner's failure to comply with the terms of this agreement, whichever occurs first. So if he fails to comply with any of those items that's on Exhibit 2 or anything else in here, he fails to provide us with the insurance, then the agreement is terminated.
It's terminated completely.
That's correct.
Okay. I am concerned over this in the requirements that we're asking people in business. I have had phone calls from those within the same industry who have had to put up 90,000 gallon water tanks for fire, and they have discussed that they've had to wait maybe 6, 8, 9 months for the process to do various things, but it's worked. And I just have trouble in looking at this, and why should one individual have the exception? I think it destroys the credibility of our whole program.
Other questions, comments?
Mr. Chairman, if I might elaborate a little bit on that. And another provision in the agreement that we're looking at is section 3.2, subdivision A. And there it says the actions described in the attached exhibit 2 shall be performed no later than the date specified therein. It does not provide for any exceptions or extensions in there, but we could certainly clarify by amending that provision to read that the owner agrees to complete the actions described in attached Exhibit 2 no later than the date specified therein with no extensions. We think it's already there, but we could certainly clarify it that there is no extensions anticipated with this.
I would appreciate that if that could be done. Thank you.
Any other comments?
I guess I'll just comment really quickly. I want to make sure, Mr. Avila, I know you signed this. I want to be very clear. I agree with Supervisor Monteith. There are no do-overs, and this was as stretch as it was. I think November 9th, November 16th, November 30th, December 14th, and February 1st will be important days for you. I also want to agree that this does not come back before the board if there's any issues where he doesn't meet the deadline, the enforcement action occurs. So.
Okay. At this point, I'll ask if any audience members wish to comment on this item. I do have one specific request to speak, and that's from April Primo. Good morning.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm appalled at this. I've come to here to talk to you about equity. Equity, like in the 14th Amendment to the Constitution, Brown versus the Board of Education. And I'm going to tell you why I'm talking about equity. A couple of years ago, in our neighborhood, this is a very emotional thing because half of our neighborhood died because of it. We had a gentleman, a dairyman, put in not one, but two holding ponds illegally with not the right setbacks. Then he proceeded to put in a whole line of, it looks out there like it's a place where they hold cows for slaughter. He has a whole bunch of pins and stuff out there. I filed a grievance with the Environmental Resource Board. The gentleman came out and said, no, he has permits for that. I said, no, he doesn't. I went down and got the pictures from the place down here. You know, you can get pictures of the flyovers of the entire county. And pinpointed the exact day that he put these in. Went down to the thing, found out that there was no permits. And when I showed the evidence to the gentleman, he said, oh, I guess you didn't get permits.
I said, that's great. Well, in the meantime, we went to the water board. We talked to the water board. We came to this board. We went to Mr. Chiesa. Nobody would help us. Eventually, they made him do the setbacks. We had the highest cluster rate of cancer in the state of California. Since then, three people have died in our neighborhood. One little girl who happens to be 13 years old spent 9 months in chemotherapy. So far, you have not made any concern or any effort to do the safety and health concerns in that area, the erosion or dust control in that area. Nobody paid any attention. As a matter of fact, the gentleman in Environmental Resources, and I have a witness to this, brought out the building inspector to my house, the building inspector that already came, to my house to see if he could find some building code wrong with my property. Now, the equity part comes in. When City of Turlock complains, we jump too. When handicapped individuals complained, older community people who have been in this community for years and their parents have been in this community, you turn a blind eye to this. If you pass this, we want you to go out there and do something with that dairy. I'm really outraged about the whole thing because some of the wells in our neighborhood had 210 nitrates. We have proof. I have everything in writing. I believe if you're going to do this to Mr. Avila, then you better go out there and do the same thing to that dairyman for equity sources.
Thank you. Anybody else wish to speak on this item? Seeing no one, we'll bring it back to the board. Action.
May I just ask what the conversion for the milk barn is? What are they converting it into? If this is something new that wasn't up there last week.
My understanding is it's just been converted to kind of a storage area, but we haven't had an opportunity to really analyze it.
Oh, okay. I was up there last Saturday, and then they were shut down that day, and then everything was pretty neat, and as it was closed down, all the equipment was lined up very neatly, and you would never know there was a problem driving by it. I think we went as far as we can, and the conditions with the time limits are reasonable, and I think Mr. Avila should be able to meet these requirements and put this behind him. His building permits, use permits, erosion control, encroachment permits. I mean, these are all things that he has sufficient time to do. I'm okay with the staff recommendations.
Okay. Just real quick, I went out there too last week just to check this out, and it doesn't look like that bad of an operation. But there's only so far we can go with this, I think, and I think everybody's gone beyond the call of duty to try to keep you going, Mr. Avila, out there. And I know a lot of calls came in from employees to retain their jobs and asking the board to not shut this thing down so they can keep their jobs. But I think that responsibility falls square on you at this point to keep their jobs. And we're trying to keep everybody safe out there. And so I just want to make that point that it's not the county that's taking these people's jobs. The county's doing everything it can to keep that place open, but we need it to be safe for the employees there to work, and so it's really the ball's back in your court now. It falls on you to help them retain their jobs as part of this. I mean, none of us like the regulations, everything that we have to deal with in government, and I know it doesn't make it easy to operate here in California, but there's certain things that, you know, that we just have to do. Just like whatever, I work all year long trying to save people taxes and doing everything I can to minimize the taxes that they have to pay, but we still do that within the law. We try to change the laws. We try to get the taxes reduced. We're hoping this election today might help with some of that. But still, there's nothing that's more frustrating for people who are paying their taxes when there are people who are not paying their taxes. There's nothing that galls me more when I've got to do this and I'm going to do everything I can to try to minimize that or try to change those laws so that I won't have to. But I'm still going to follow the darn law until the law gets changed. And when I see somebody who's not paying their fair share, it is very frustrating. to think you're doing what you have to do, and that's just the way it works here. So I understand the frustrations with all the regulations and things like that that California does to us, but they are what they are right now. We're doing everything we can to change and minimize them, and when it comes to public safety and the safety of your employees, we've got to follow the law, so I'm going to support this.
Okay. Any other comments, or is there a motion ready?
I'll go ahead and make the motion. We accept the three staff recommendations with the change on 2B, and maybe Jackie could read that.
Just to clarify, that change is revised the wording a little bit to read as follows. Delay implementation of the immediate abatement action outlined in item 2A, provided that the owners agree within 2 weeks to perform the actions set forth in an indemnity agreement.
Okay, there's a motion. Is there a second?
I'm sorry. There's also an amendment to the agreement as well. Amendment of agreement paragraph 3.2 to include the phrase with no extensions.
Sorry. Thank you. Okay. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Okay. Second by Withrow. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 5-0. Item D1, approval to continue implementation of shorter Williamson Act contracts in return for reduction in landowner's property tax relief in calendar year 2013 and related actions under AB 1265. Mm-hmm. County Council, I'd like to announce.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, this matter involves Williamson Act contracts. Four of the five sitting members of the Board of Supervisors have interests in land that are either under Williamson Act contract or qualify to be enrolled under Williamson Act contract. This therefore creates a potential conflict of interest that would require four of the five supervisors to step down. Only Supervisor Monteith, who does not own any agricultural land, is exempted from this. That leaves us in a situation where we don't have sufficient number of board members to decide this matter. So at this time, we recommend that you invoke the rule of necessity by having those affected board members draw straws, with the two that draw the long straws being able to sit and make this decision.
Okay.
Me too. You guys go ahead and pick, because
those two are out. So Supervisor DeMartini and Supervisor Chiesa drew the short end of the stick and are leaving the dais. Under this rule, Supervisor Withrow and myself will be allowed to vote on this item. So we'll proceed.
Good morning, Chairman O'Brien, Ms. Nino, Mr. Doran, Angela Freitas, Planning Director. Beginning back in 2010, state legislation has provided an opportunity for counties to offset a portion of the loss of Williamson Act subvention funding by establishing a local self-help subvention program. The program works by making the terms of the contract 10% shorter, so it goes from a 10-year contract to a 9-year contract, in return for a 10% reduction in the landowner's property tax relief. The increased revenue resulting from the reduction in the landowner's property tax relief is transferred directly to the county's general fund. Counties are eligible to participate if they find that the county received less than one half of the foregone Williamson Act subvention funds for the previous fiscal year. The foregone funds for fiscal year 2012-2013 is approximately $1.7 million, and the county will receive zero in subvention funding from the state. Approval of this item will allow the county to continue to move forward with the implementation of AB 1265 in fiscal year 2013-2014. The general fund impact is estimated to be an increase of about $1.2 million. Are there any questions?
Just a comment. This is the new normal for Williamson Act, and I'm just wondering if we can look at a way that we can, next year when this comes forward, try to create the policy that it's in the future, so that way we don't have to readdress this every year. I know it says that we have to receive less than half, but if we can set that as a policy and it's legal, let's do that rather than having to revisit every year, redraw straws every year.
We will certainly look at that, because staff would love nothing better than not come every year. One thing, however, this voluntary program is only allowed through the state until 2015. So hopefully the state will enact something more permanent.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? Any questions or comments from members of the audience? Seeing none, I'll bring it back.
So move it.
Motion by Montieth.
Second.
Second by Withrow. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Passes 3-0. We wait for our colleagues to return. We're going to move to correspondence next.
This board has received a letter from the State Fish and Game Commission regarding the consideration of the gray wolf as an endangered species.
We refer to Agricultural Commissioner Ancilla's weights and measures. And we'll now we'll move to Board of Supervisor reports. Are there any Board of Supervisor reports?
I'm just going to encourage everybody to go vote, and in the words of Mitt Romney, for the love of country, go vote.
Any other Board of Supervisor reports?
I won't make a comment about that. I would say that I'd like to, but I'm not going to. next Tuesday, I'm going to present the Westside Healthcare Task Force Biggest Loser Award to the city of Patterson. I'm going to make that presentation at their city council. They lost 75.5 pounds and were in first place.
Well, you were part of the team, right?
I was, too. I was 5 pounds of that 75.5 pounds.
All right, Legislative Fiscal Management Report, Chief Executive Officer.
I do not have one today, Chair.
Okay. That brings us to the end of the agenda. This meeting is adjourned.